Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is On Point. I'm NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. The Iowa State Fair starts tomorrow in Des Moines. USA Today says the fair will be ground zero for the 2020 presidential race. 24 candidates will get 20 minutes and a microphone during the fair, each to make their case to voters. One of them is Joe Sestak. He joins us today from Des Moines. You can join our conversations. What questions do you have for this former naval flag officer and congressman? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook, of course, at On Point Radio. Joe Sestak served two terms as a Democratic congressman in Pennsylvania's 7th District, notably a conservative one. He's a retired three-star admiral who served in the National Security Council under President Clinton. He announced his candidacy in June. Congressman, welcome to On Point.
David, thanks for having me aboard.
Absolutely. Let's start just quickly with this week's news. President Trump is about to visit El Paso, Dayton, to mark, of course, the terrible massacres in each of those cities. There's been a lot of protest about the president's rhetoric and actions in those cities. A couple of public officials have said he's not welcome. Is it appropriate for him to go?
Yes, it is appropriate for him to go. In fact, it's absolutely necessary for the president, the commander-in-chief of our nation, to be there. Mm-hmm. But yes, I would also say that it's unfortunate that at times incendiary language has sometimes fomented an atmosphere from the White House where some people have acted upon dark impulses. Perhaps he'll take a lesson from this and understand that the president of the United States of America's most precious asset is the ability to unite, not divide, like the captain of a ship.
Do you use the word?
That's what's important.
Congressman, you use the word foment. Do you feel that the president's rhetoric has fomented violence in this country?
I think it has fueled an atmosphere where those that feel as though they might act upon something feel as though it might be abetted. I say that because, look, when we had women that came aboard ships in the Navy, and I had the first ship that tried a test case of women in combatant ships, if I had stood there and kind of winked at the guys and said, well, we're getting women aboard now, I don't think you would have had good order and discipline on that as they came aboard. Mm-hmm. It's how the commander-in-chief of the nation also must act. Not divide, but stay and say everyone is treated equally. And that is not what's been happening.
We've heard in recent days calls to address this kind of violence. You've heard different kinds of figures offer different kinds of elements of the issue to address. Some want to do additional kinds of gun control. Others want to approach mental health. Still others in the Republican Party are focused on social media and gaming sites or games online that contain violence in them. What actions, if any, would be appropriate from the White House under a Sestak administration?
First, the rhetoric has to be one where we speak to the individuals and the nation as a whole that everyone is welcome and we're working together. Second, I believe that people here in America have the absolute right to a gun. In fact, when I was captain of Navy ship, I'd invite those who owned a gun to bring it aboard, put it in the armory, and then on Sunday afternoon stop the ship and put a silhouette on the sled behind it, then slowly at slow speed let them practice at sea what they did at home and hunting and all. Mm-hmm. But I also boarded ships with assault weapons with my crew. And I don't want those same assault weapons on the streets where when we had an assault weapons ban, the deaths of police officers plummeted during the Clinton administration. We need someone who is respected in that White House, as I was when I represented nearly 2-to-1 Republican district and got reelected while spending a dime on a campaign ad to cite progressive values of an F from an NRA to say, no, this will no longer stand, and assault weapons bans, to close the gun show loopholes in order to have background checks that are universal, because we do have to ensure that by at least this one means, and there are others like mental health and others, that we must go forward with a nation that is safer by a leader who understands this is the right path and must do it courageously.
What does the first 100 days of your White House, your administration look like?
It'll be when I announce. The very first day, I will hold a town hall in the middle of America, open to everyone who can fit in. Everyone that can fit in. Former Trump supporters, former Clinton supporters. Because I think what people most want in their leader is someone who is accountable to them, above party, above any special interest, and above oneself. And then I'll fly over to France and convene the nations pre-planned of the Paris Accord and increase as well as enforce those types of national commitments that begin to stop the world's greatest threat to humanity, climate change. And on my way back, I will announce training for a lifetime. I understand the challenge with student loans, but what about the labor force, the enlisted men and women, so to speak, of ships, those who work with their hands and their minds? We need to do what we do in the military, is we train and retrain when a vehicle, when an airplane goes out of service. We don't kick them out like out of a coal mine. We train and retrain them. And then when I land, I'll probably walk along into a gun show and just walk through, maybe with Ollie North, who I know, who left being president. And I'll state up front how I feel about it, but I know they're valued. And finally, I will go walk into a mosque. I want people to understand that their president values every member of the ship, because we don't get to choose who comes aboard a ship. We work with everyone, gay, women, men, doesn't matter, of all colors. And then we don't kick the can down the road. We don't have that choice in the Navy. We no longer have that choice. And if we're going to avoid having another president that can only do executive orders, the next one rips it out, if we need to advance policies for those who see only the growth of inequity, not economy, you need a president who is trusted by all. And that, as I demonstrated when I ran against my own president, when they accepted Arlen Specter, the man who had tried to humiliate Anita Hill. Today that wouldn't stand, but back then I felt he should be held accountable for what he did and ran against my party's desires. I think standing next to Mr. Trump on that stage in the debates, people will understand, even those who voted for him because they knew the system wasn't working, will say, this is someone who will be actually honest and with integrity be accountable to us. That's how I'll do the first day, and that's how I'll do those first 100 days, and that's how I'll do all 8 years.
We have a call for Democratic presidential candidate Joe Sestak calling from Iowa City, Iowa. Troy, thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening. What's your question for the former congressman?
Yes, my question is are you for open borders where everyone from Egypt, Syria, India, Ethiopia, the farmers from South Africa, white farmers from South Africa, can come into the United States? How many people are you going to let in?
Yes, sir. Thanks. Troy, let me ask you a question. Are you a Democrat? Will you be participating in these caucuses this year or this coming year?
I am a registered independent, uh-huh, and I cannot vote. Uh-huh. In that.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call. Thanks for letting us know. Joe Sestak seemed to be a little interesting approach to the question, but nonetheless, how would you approach the notion both of our southern border, which the president's placed so much attention to, but also on the question of letting in refugees, which was a question early on in his term. He, you know, deeply cut back what the Obama administration had allowed from places like Syria and other places where refugees were seeking a stature and sanction here.
First off, in answer to his question, I would welcome every single one of those types of individuals, but I do believe that our borders should be secure. I headed the Navy's strategic anti-terrorism right after 9/11. At least at that time, I knew that south of the border there were drug cartels dealing with Al-Qaeda, for example. So, yes, I get protecting our borders. We're doing it so stupidly. Who can't climb over a wall? Why not have an unmanned air vehicle if they can look down and even get water to those who are crossing and direct someone for water across the desert? But all that said, I also want to protect our economy. And we know that since 1970, American women have a birth rate that does not replenish, so to speak, those who unfortunately pass away every year. If it were not for immigrants of all types since 1970, we would be in a population death spiral, like Japan that has no immigration policy. And therefore, our economy would suffer significantly. My father's an immigrant. And we need to understand it rejuvenates us with those who come and work and are really with ingenuity. A woman who walks 800 miles, carrying her child away from violence, knowing she may be raped. The bravery of that woman is someone that I would value here. And so, David, to your question, how would I deal with the refugees? We have within our government called a mass strategy plan where FEMA is aligned with the Red Cross to handle refugees from hurricanes. Why is ICE handling children that aren't trained to do so? Get that down there immediately, and then get the children back with their families, and have the families go where they need to be, not detained. But most importantly, militaries, I tell people, never fix a problem. They can stop a problem. And I bring that up because we can fix this problem by the developmental aid that the Northern Triangle, those three countries that are fomented into violence, need to become. That's how we fixed Germany after a military stopped it in World War II. We fixed it by a developmental aid that made sure fascism didn't rise again. And so that's why you need also someone in the White House that understands with breadth and depth from global experience in war overseas, as well as serving in the White House where President Clinton has directed defense policy, that if we can restore our leadership in the world, we will be able to welcome so many great citizens of other countries that want to come here and that we need to build our economy and do it in an orderly, safe way and get the undocumented into a line. Because every study has shown once they're there at the back of the line and go through procedures like good bipartisan bills have said under John McCain, George Bush, and Ted Kennedy, that America comes united again. And that what every study has shown, we'll get more productivity and we'll get much more in taxes once they go through the process of background checks, mm-hmm. any crimes committed, et cetera. So overall, we need a comprehensive approach by somebody who understands that, yes, we need immigrants to keep this economy going if we're going to compete with China.
I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point. Congressman, I want to do what we've done for a number of the folks who've joined us who are running for president and just do a quick lightning round, just a couple of sentences to address each so people get a flavor for you. You obviously former three-star admiral. So I want to ask you a little bit about our continued military involvement and presence in Afghanistan and Iraq in the Middle East. What's your feeling about our presence there? How comfortable are you with our degree of engagement?
I'm not comfortable because no one has laid out a strategy with milestones that say, here's why we needed a 40,000 troop increase some years ago in Afghanistan. And so therefore, they didn't have milestones that we could see if it's working or not. That said, I do know that we were right to do Afghanistan, not Iraq, because those senators, Democrats and Republicans alike, who voted for that tragic misadventure, had little understanding that I mentioned to you earlier, that militaries might stop a problem. They never fixed it. And they unleashed Shia against Sunni and Sunni against Shia. And then former General Saddam Hussein created ISIS that has metastasized, left us there. We need now what we need to do is deal with ISIS because of that. But in Afghanistan, we needed to set a date in the first by within 4 years, we will withdraw, leaving a modicum of safety in that area. Mm-hmm. It may not be all of it. And we need to deal with Taliban. But if I could, David, please. I convened the world after I left the military. I didn't take one of those lobbying jobs that 450 senators and congressmen did. And I brought 158 nations, each with a high school team, including an all-girls Muslim team from Afghanistan, who I wanted to lead the parade. And I had them at Constitutional Hall across from the White House. And they all came for the inaugural Robotics Olympics. And as they walked up that stage, I said to the person next to me, if we had fixed the illiteracy rate of women in Afghanistan, which was 95% when I was on the ground there at the beginning of the war, heading the Navy's strategic counterterrorism for a very short period, we would have done more to fix the global war of terror than our military, after 19 years of war, has courageously been trying to stop it. So, yes, we need to set a date certain. We need to withdraw and have a modicum of safety and then contain any other problems. But let's not forget those young Muslim girls. And make sure we leave a modicum of safety there, because the real challenge to us is an illiberal world order that's arising, China.
Okay. Twitter-linked answer to the next two very quickly.
Yes, sir. Sorry.
Where are you in healthcare insurance? You've heard a spirited debate from different wings of the party on this primary. Yes, where do you land?
Yes, sir. Again, I go back to my Navy training, piss poor planning against piss poor execution for a public option. I voted for that when I was in Congress, and the Senate couldn't stand up to the health insurance industry and took it out. That public option is a transition of choice, and we see if it works towards one of two roads, I would like single payer, because even when my daughter's brain cancer came back this mm-hmm. past year, which delayed me from getting in until recently, could not get the drug approved for her, and I would have to pay $300,000. Mm-hmm. I want the insurance companies out of the business, but I want to make sure it works. And so therefore, they have a transition choice, and you either go towards where private hospitals are there under Medicare for All, or you go towards the VA model, which, if you read the book Wounds of War, is rated by the New England Journal of Medicine as better in providing health care than better or as good as any private or public, like Medicare, a way to do it. And so therefore, at the end of the day, I want this to be a transition of choice for those 255 million Americans like me, mm-hmm. even though I'm in the military, that have some form of private health care insurance underneath them. So they get a choice to go into it. It proves itself, and you go
on. In the 30 seconds we have left, Joe, give us your pitch. Tell us why you've been a two-time congressman and an admiral. At the same time, you lost two races for Senate in Pennsylvania. Tell us why you're a credible choice for president of the United States.
Absolutely. Even though my party did put $6 million in against me, more than they put against
Tell us
McConnell.
Why.
But the bottom line is, I want to serve Americans because they are yearning for someone to be accountable to them above party, above self, above any special interest. That, more than anything, is why I'm running. Second, to provide global leadership, mm-hmm. that we can restore U.S. leadership in the world, to protect our American dream of home, like both Ronald Reagan and John F. Kennedy understood. And third, that if I have the trust of people, then we can move forward policies where too many see only the growth of inequity, not the growth of economy.
You're hearing the voice there of Joe Sestak. Joe Sestak, thank you so much. He is the candidate for president of the Democratic Party, formerly on the National Security Council under President Clinton, two-time Pennsylvania congressman and retired three-star general, admiral, excuse me, sir. Thank you, Joe Sestak.
Sir, thank you for having me aboard.
You can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast or website, onpointradio.org. You can find us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.